Yeah, this is episode 6.
Yep. Are we welcome to the Vetted Podcast?
Yeah.
Welcoming. How do we start that?
Welcome to the Vetted Podcast.
Welcome to the Vetted Podcast.
Let me see here. How much coffee have I had yet this morning?
I've had more than my fair share.
Well, hey, we are recording live from Columbia, Missouri at Pro Partners Team. And Stephen Herman here from Pro Partners Team.
Kale Flassbuller.
And Lindo Gushelswain.
What's your title?
Intern Lindo.
He's not director anymore.
He got demoted.
Well, hey, while we're wanting to give him, before we dive too deep in today, what we're going to talk about, no guests today. But what we do have is fun is, let me bring this little guy into view here. Intern Lindo won the Pro Partners
bracket.
Because you know a ton about basketball, right?
Everything. Everything.
What does it mean when you're offsides in basketball?
Offsides?
Yeah.
There's no offsides.
Okay, you do know some about basketball. But we have our trophy here. My son, Trip Herman, loves 3D printing and designed the trophy and appropriately put a dog on here since we love animals, love our veterinarians representing that. Got the basketball here. And actually did all this right here, designed with the relief and all that for Pro Partners Team. And I don't know, that March Madness, hopefully, you know, we're not advertising here. Who knows the kind of trouble that'd get us in.
Yeah.
We're not selling it. But Lindo,
come get your trophy.
Sweet.
Yay. You need to hit the applause button on the backside. Congratulations. Show that trophy off. You got that for the next 364 days until the next tournament.
Oh, it's going to be a floating trophy.
Floating trophy.
I like that.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, going to float. Nice. Going
to
float.
I had to ask Lindo who won this morning.
Did you? Well, that's the kind of, I like to be in bed 9:30, 10, and like, you know, it's 10, 20, and UConn was handling the game well, but you just never know.
No, I mean, 10 points can happen in a minute in basketball.
Yeah, hell yeah. No. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it was a fun game, exciting, and that was fun as a team. A Pro Partners Team to do those. Brendan is the one that puts the bracket together for us, and we have fun. So came down to, there were two people left that could win. It was Lindo. It was my wife, Dr. Lauren Herman, who could win. She had Purdue. Lindo had UConn, and well, rest is history. What looks like Lauren and I tied overall points, though.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah, we tied for second. And so, yeah, husband and wife, that's probably a good thing, right?
It's good, right?
Do I say a tiebreaker goes to the one who picked the winning team, or can I do that?
Well, all I can say is you guys were the first to lose, but yeah.
Well, hey, that hope everybody enjoyed March Madness. It's a ton of fun. It even if you don't know basketball, it just gets everybody involved. It's about, you know, we talk about culture, and so that's
fun.
It's fun.
I watched three games.
You never would have watched them.
Yeah, I watched, most of them were Caitlin Clark, but
yeah. You may watch it because of Caitlin Clark, which is amazing, right? Yeah. But we didn't do a women's bracket. We should have probably done the women's bracket.
Yeah, we should have.
We'll do that next year, right? Except for Caitlin Clark won't be there next year.
That's all right. We can.
But what she did for the sport, though, that's amazing.
She's the most viewer. I don't know what the viewership was last night, but I think her game that she's in with the UConn game, Final Four, no, the final game, I think, ended up being the most watched ever.
Really?
Between South Carolina and her, it's like 16.4 million or 16.5 million viewers.
Wow.
And the only thing bigger is like, you know, the Super Bowl and a couple of award shows or something.
Yeah.
Is it.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. That's why we talk about women around here, because that's who's in the veterinary space for sure, coming out of veterinary schools, and they need to get paid. I mean, how much bigger deal is that than they get paid? And so, hey, I think what's that correlates to is talking about vital signs for your practice. And we're going to do two parts today. Part one is going to be about the financial vital signs, what's on the profit and loss statement. And then we'll talk about in the next part down the road, we'll talk about the practice vital signs. Maybe they interact with each other, but they also are two important parts. And as we look at episode 6 here, vital signs, we spent, and it's like, how do you correlate good analogies to get people to, it's really the getting it inside the mind out versus outside in. It's like what strikes inside the mind goes, oh, I understand what you're talking about. Uh-huh. And vital signs, there's three, my understanding is there's three vital signs, human, animal, whatever, you know, Got a pulse? As a pulse regular. As a breathing regular, respiratory, and then temperature. On a human, 98.6. Dogs different than that, but those are three big things. And if you look at those, just those three numbers, you know what is going on within a certain amount of margin, right? If they're in good shape, you're good. Don't need to dig in any further. Shouldn't have to, right? We can talk about preventative, right? That we can dig in on those things. We still might want to do some blood work just to check for things we can't see. But for the most part, you're like, you're healthy.
Yeah.
You should be doing good. So it helps you to go the next day. Whereas you don't have to worry about those granular things like the once a year blood work you should do for your animal, right? Where you dive in deeper. So today it's really like, hey, do you need to dive in today? Are you healthy? And your financials. So I'm excited to dive in and bring this in a way. Actually, we've got lots of screens up today because we want to make sure we look at a few articles and also bring our perspective, our viewpoint to these buzzwords. What are those buzzwords that are out there?
Buzzword, KPI, benchmark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody's grabbed onto those, right? All the consulting firms out there, everybody's like, I got KPIs, I got benchmarks.
But what are they? What's in the number?
Yeah.
That's the real question. I think it just seems like maybe this has been happening more recently, but every meeting I'm on, it's like, well, such and such says this KPI should be this.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe.
Yeah.
But what are they using? What are the metrics that go into that number specifically? Because there's a lot of variables that make up each one of these benchmarks, KPIs, whatever you want to say, that are confusing and would lead you to believe that you're off base or you're on base when in fact maybe you're not.
Yeah.
So I think everybody measures things differently.
Yeah. Well, and like those three vital signs for the animal, we were thinking about three financial vital signs for the practice, which is gross profit or cost of goods sold, depending on how you look at that number, just the inverse of it. And then labor rate and net profit, net income. How are you doing? Those three signs right there, There are some ranges, right, of where you're at. And at the end of the day, it's like, hey, what's the bottom line? Am I making money?
Yeah.
Okay, if I'm making money, then I look at my labor rate. Is my labor rate right? If it's low, I may not be paying myself well as a doctor, right? And then cost of goods sold, that's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Cost of goods sold is really, I'll tell you if you're buying too much or not pricing right.
Or
theft or... You don't have somebody that's ringing things up. It's accidental, right?
Yeah.
It's that
something going on in the system.
Yeah. Something going on in the system and not getting on the chart right. So, yeah, those.
I think a lot of times they move kind of with each other.
Yeah.
You might have a high labor rate and a low cost of goods sold, or you might have a high cost of goods sold and a lower labor rate. And, you know, but at the end of the day, if you've got a high one and a low the other and your net income comes out all right, you know, it's not a terrible thing, right? You're going to have one higher than the other. It's so long as net income's where you're comfortable with it. That's one of those things.
Yeah, if you're a high service, you know, got high service and maybe not a whole lot of product sales, you could be on higher on that. But then the bottom line is still coming out 10-15%. Mm-hmm. Of course, you see they talk about the high performing practice at 24%.
Yeah,
right. Well, how many of those are out there? And again, are those they talk about? Are those numbers normalized? Right. What's in that number?
Mm-hmm. Because if you're not paying yourself as a doctor, as the owner of the practice, you could get to 24% net income.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing $1 million in production.
Yeah.
And you're paying yourself 60 grand instead of 200,000, you know, based on production of 20% roughly.
Yep.
In that range. So, yeah, there's a lot to look at there.
That's why it's what's in the number.
What's in the number?
It's just a percentage.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think that from the doctor standpoint too, and they see an animal, all animals are different. I mean, you hear about, this animal's predisposed to this kind. I'd be worried about that vital sign in that animal. This one over here, maybe not as much, right? Or a breed even. Mm-hmm. And that's something you look at between veterinarians. There's not only are there different kinds of practices, high volume, high service, you know, rural, urban, small animal, mixed animal, large animal.
Equine,
right? Specialty practices, emergency practices, all those things that are out there. But there's also, really, it's not only what's in a number, it's what's in it for you as the practice owner. What do you want to achieve? And that matters too. So when you're chasing a number, see, we've had some clients that go to a group and they're like, I'm at the bottom of the group on profit, on revenue. Well, the problem is in the group they're in, they're talking to people that are in California. they're here in Missouri, right? They're talking to people from California, New York City, and you're going, yeah, you're going to be the bottom of the group because your ACT is going to be half of New York City because we're half the cost of living.
Yeah.
So how? Why are we even, who are we comparing ourselves against? So those groups out there too, they not knocking them, but man, why isn't it's like, hey, that's not a good benchmark.
We got to normalize those.
Got to normalize those. So I think that's what's important to having someone you can sit down with and get to know what's in a number.
Well, it's more than just a number on the page.
Mm-hmm. It's about you, what you're looking for. So if we dive into looking at it, one of the key things if we're going to get a benchmarking is standardization. You got to have standardization. And I look at coming from supermarket industry, we knew what each department needed to be at. And we had three locations, and we had three different demographics. And each location did have its own benchmarks. Our goal was to get close to the same net income, mm-hmm. like you said earlier, at all three locations, right? And so we had our multiple departments, you know, grocery, dairy, frozen, bakery, deli, meat, HBC, liquor, and all those departments that are out there. And we knew what they needed to come in at. And each for each location, they had different gross profit because one store sold higher in wine and meats, there were higher profit. Another store did more volume, but lower profit. So the labor rate was different. You know, so then you get to a different, or you use the same net income is what you're looking mm-hmm. for. And so if we look across that on standardization, each department was categorized the same way.
Yeah.
Just like the AHA chart of accounts that's out there. And that's where, you know, you and I have tackled for the past, you know, 5 years of taking that standardization that, yes, that chart of accounts is standardized, but we have seen people take that standardization and don't apply it right.
Yeah, because it's really, really hard to do right.
Yes.
I mean, if you, just because you have this AHA chart of accounts in your practice or in your books or in your PIM system, doesn't mean it's being used properly right. or to the fullest extent.
Right.
And likely because it's daunting. There's over 200 accounts in it. Yeah. So I could totally see why people struggle with implementing that.
200 accounts, and what do you have in there that could go to the number of items and services that can go to that 200 accounts?
It could be thousands and thousands of lines. Depending on the practice, you know, most, I would say, are between 800 to 1,200.
So you're relying on someone to remember where 1,200 items should go on the QuickBooks, that they're using QuickBooks or whatever accounting system they're using, right? To standardize that.
Yeah.
And like we see where some accountants, the problem is too, is one of the things is you take that to your local accountant mm-hmm. and they want to change it up, number one, because that doesn't translate to an easy tax return for them because they don't understand it. And then they'll take and go, well, we've seen it. Why is your cost of goods sold high? Well, because they're putting labor in there.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't manufacturing, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, you look at your three vital signs, and that practice might go, man, I cost sold really messed up. But how do you dive in and figure that out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think the other thing that I try to tell people with DVM office, especially is in like when I first start talking to them, because a lot of people come to the DVM office side of things wanting KPIs and benchmarking and doing that kind of stuff. And I'm like, before we ever even discuss what the benchmark should be in that category, we need to look at you compared to you over time and get you operating at a place where you feel comfortable about what is the benchmark at your practice. Like, this is what we can effectively do, like with what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Then we can make an adjustment on that. But it might take a year or 18 months to get those things figured out.
It takes time. We can start today with some basic things, right? But to get to the optimal point, yeah, you got to have your... And the other thing is the trailing 12 months. Mm-hmm. How many financials just end on December 31st?
And then
we start new.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at the whole running 12 months. I'm in January. I'm looking all the way to February of last year still for trailing 12 months. I got to look at my year over year. That's the other thing too, is on these three vital signs, are you looking at it for a month, year to date, mm-hmm. trailing 12 months?
Yeah.
Are you comparing it to the last year? And if you don't have that standardization right, you can't compare mm-hmm. to yourself. Like you said, man, that's a great point.
Yeah. You got to compare you to you. And I think too, you can't just look at 1 month. And the way veterinary clinics are run,
kind
of making a blanket statement here, so there might be an outlier.
Well, you say like
too,
coming off March.
Yeah, coming off March, it's going to look completely different in March than it is in January.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you probably need to look at 2 or 3 months to really start to look at a trend.
Yeah.
Right? So we can, yeah.
we can obviously have monthly goals and monthly things like that. But if you're going to really drill down and see, is there a problem with that number? It's going to have to be over a period of time.
Yeah.
And so whether that, if you do bulk buys in the spring and you expense out, you know, obviously your COGS is going to be higher for a while until it smooths out. So
yeah,
there's just so much into what goes into the number. Mm-hmm. You can't just say cost of goods sold should be 20% or whatever.
Right.
30%. It doesn't matter what the right number is. It's just too broad of a topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Before you can ever dive in, you got to make sure those numbers. I mean, I guess if you think about it from correlation with animal medicine, it's the blood work. It's the, what machine are you using? What numbers are you getting? Are they, you know, you rely on some systems that really get you the right thing, whether it's an in-house lab, sending off to a reference lab, depending on how you're set up, which that'll be fun on our next talk with Jason Merkling. Is talking about IDEX and some things they do there. And it's not sponsored by IDEX. Jason's a friend of ours. We like what he does. But if you correlate that back the other way, they can say when they get that IDEX report that those numbers, these are right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the tests come back right. Problem with the numbers is when you get your report back.
Yeah, what's in it?
What's in it? It's not as straightforward. That's why, you know, with DVM Office, you got to have an automated system. Mm-hmm. And you got people checking that automated system to make sense of those numbers coming out of the practice management system. And also, you know, coming from your bank account, mm-hmm. credit cards, all those things that go into it. So yeah, to even get into your vital signs, gosh, are you able to measure those?
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal. It's interesting to talk about March, the spring buy for preventatives. And it's interesting, there's this article on April 8th, you know, we're looking at this Banfield shows lagging heartworm prevention. And Banfield's got obviously a big breadth of data out there, you know, big corporation. And that's a problem, right? People think in the wintertime that
they don't need their heartworm.
They don't need their heartworm. You know, mosquitoes aren't around the northern states, that you know, which is obviously the reports are saying that's not true. And so, yeah, as we look at that and go, you can find more in those things. We talk about opportunities, go, man, why? How could you smooth that number out?
Mm-hmm.
It's not bought. It's like bought all the time.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a big thing to look at. Then you could see in March, and if because you do need to look at your month and go, why is my cost of goods sold so high? How can I change that? It's real preventative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
It's really advising the client about the patient needs to have that year round. So what's in a number? There's a lot. So,
is your clinic facing a talent shortage? You're not alone. In today's competitive landscape, finding the right people can feel like searching for a needle in a haystack. Recruiting top-notch veterinary talent doesn't have to be difficult. DVM Connect is here to revolutionize your veterinary recruiting game. We're the secret weapon you never knew you needed. Our social media experts will partner with you to curate a personalized recruitment strategy that fills your clinic with passionate, qualified individuals. Say goodbye to wasted time and hello to a collaborative, stress-free journey towards building your dream team. For more information, visit us at propartnersteam.com.
I think, again, that's, as we talked about, battling in order for us to get best advice, and you have to have patience too, right? You can't just get a quick answer. Usually veterinary practice, top-line revenue, you know, it's coming through, it's good, then you got enough to operate on and do well, and you want to grow in the right, smart way, but you also want to perform better. And that takes time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes time. It's kind of like getting an animal in that, you can get healthier, right?
Yeah.
And do those things. That's what we're looking at too, is let's take time and have the right thing. So,
yeah. I think also if you look at just like kind of a bar graph of general gross revenue at a vet clinic,
yeah,
you'll see a general kind of a bell curve to a point. You
right.
come into the year January, you yep. know, high in the summer, low yep. in the lower in the
great,
fall.
Great time to have business in the winter, right? Especially when you're going in to buy stuff and like
yeah. So it's like how do we look at those and smooth those out for the months where we do have a lot of money save for the months that we maybe lean and
yeah.
you know make those choices
yeah.
a lot smoother.
Well, I think a big part of having the 12, 18 months of data in the history is so we can look forward
mm-hmm.
into the future and be proactive, just like we're trying to talk about preventive medicine for the animal. We're like, what proactive preventive steps can we do to think ahead also to be like, we know January. I guess one thing we get from clients is like, man, my sales are down in January. Like, yes, compared to December, November, October, yes, they're down. But compared to last year, no, they're up. Mm-hmm. It's just a slower month because
people are coming off the Christmas time period.
Nice.
All kinds of stuff, right? So. Weather kicks in. There's so many factors that drop business down that time of year. And then get into March and refunds are coming in. It's getting warm. And then, of course, in the summer where you see that bell curve, right? Like you're talking about, people don't have kids at school. They're able to schedule the veterinary appointments. They have more time for those kinds of things. And they get hit in the summer. So it's not only that look what's going on today with those vital signs. It's also being a predict for the future. It's like, when's the best time to take a vacation? Did you take one in July?
No.
You should be there. It's your most producing month. So being productive on that. But, you know, do we want to jump into looking at, you know, what on our screen over here, what we got going on with what the big profit and loss that is standardized looks like and explain, like, I don't know, explain's the right word, but go, yeah, the veterinarian that is highly schooled in veterinary medicine to dive into this, that might give you a headache or might even go,
it gives me a headache.
I like it. I don't even want to look at it. The veterinarian, like, I don't want to look at this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. I think so. To your point about that statement right there is not fun to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those of you listening, we're looking at basically a 100 line long profit and loss statement that we build at DVM Office to help all of our business owners make really good decisions.
Right.
And so the thing that we're about to launch, hopefully soon this summer, with dashboarding, is going to make that actually really easy to look at and say,
right,
hey, this is, I'm doing good, I'm doing bad, you know, or I need to make an adjustment here or there. Otherwise, I think is going to be super, super important for a lot of people and make this whole topic of KPIs and financial metrics a lot more palatable.
Right.
But to the point though, is you have to know when you buy Apoquel, you know, what you spent, and when you sell Apoquel, what you make.
Right.
And is that margin where it should be?
Right.
Over time.
Right.
And so that goes for the whole list of drugs that, you know, could be, I mean, all the vets listening know there's thousands of products that you could buy and prescribe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really, how do we get those into a good format, which is, you know, if you look at the top there, it's revenue. There's 30-ish revenue line items. And even if you're doing large animals, especially, then that list goes up drastically.
Mixed animal
component in there. And then talk about another thing. This has happened quite a bit recently about, hey, my cost of goods sold is terrible because I sell a lot of feed to large producers in my community. And like, yeah, of course, you're not marking that up as high because they bought, you know, $50,000-$100,000 worth of feed from you.
Right.
So it's like, clearly you're not going to mark that up at the rate that you're going to mark everything else up at. And then, you know, if you add that into the number, then your cost of goods sold metric is shot.
And that's where you should, on that flip side though, that labor rate should be where your metric shouldn't match the benchmark. You should have a lower labor rate because you do have a higher revenue of a product that didn't take a lot to sell. So you got to make that gross profit up in the labor.
In labor, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's just been a big thing that's happened recently. And so it's...
Can I caveat? Because someone's going to be like, oh, you don't pay people well? You're making up a labor rate? No. No. You make it up because it didn't, you know, if you got $1,000 a feed, just throwing out no number based on anything, you know, it checked out, it's gone.
It's all comes out. In, check out, gone.
Took 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's not like we went out and did a bunch of stuff.
It's not like I can go, we need to cut our labor. So I don't want
transaction itself was easy.
Yeah.
Maybe the relationship it took to build that up was not easy, but like the literal transaction of that coming in and out was simple.
Simple.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it should make it up.
Yeah.
You don't need, you know, if you go out and go, okay, per $1,000 of sales, I need X hours of, you know, people in the practice. Well, you got to factor that different.
So there's my caveat.
No, I like
that's
it.
Been happening like a it. Lot recently with our mixed animal practices, selling a lot of feed and just kind of looking at that. But as you go on down, the 6,000s, this is why we like the AHA chart of accounts, because if you look at it, you'll notice that, you know, 6,100 and 5,100 line up together. Mm-hmm. And so what we're able to do at DVM Office, and this is going to be a part of the dashboarding system, is say your markup on that is, let's just say, 2x.
Right.
So, you know, we spent 10,000, made 20 times markup. And so that way next year, this P&L is June, but you know, if we look at it next year and our markup is 1.5, you know, we've got a problem because we're now, our margin is much slimmer than it was. Did some product go up? We didn't account for it. Something like that looks, you know,
did we order more than normal?
Order more than normal
on the heavy on the shelf,
you know, all those kind of questions come to mind. And so that's why I always say, compare yourself to yourself before you try to go out to these benchmarks, you go out to these websites, you go out to these industry experts, because you know your numbers, there's going to be something in them that's unique to you that's throwing your number off. And so that might be normal for you as opposed to some other place it isn't. Well,
I think you got to ask, do you have a tailored strategy for your practice?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a tailored strategy for your practice, I know they don't treat all the animals that come through the same. But a lot of things out there, that's the way they're tailored. Like, I understand it. When we say experts, it's like, my vision's right here in this area. I'm really good at this. So, yeah, those people that are fit that box should fit that. But really, in today's world, the box is getting blown up, right? Because people are like, I don't like the box.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I want tailored strategy. I want things that fit me and my lifestyle. It's why I got into private practice, because I want to do things my way.
Yeah. And that's also why we don't treat any of our strategy clients the same, because I know I have some that put things on the balance sheet that should probably be expenses. And so we can't just take that metric perfectly.
Right.
Right. And so vice versa, they put things on the P&L that should really be balance sheet items. And so for those of you listening, if it goes on the balance sheet, it's likely not touching the profit and loss. They work with each other. But, you know, it's different. So it can skew the numbers just because you put something somewhere because you didn't. Right. Quite know how to categorize it right now.
Right.
So, you know, the ask my accountant row at the bottom of QuickBooks is sometimes that not everything in there is an expense. Sometimes it is. Yeah. Sometimes it should be higher. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's limitless amount of things that could make your numbers look a certain way.
Well, another important thing about this, I think about from safeguards, because generally the practices take their deposits and just call that sales. They don't take their stuff out of the practice management system a lot of times and break that up to go, do those two even match?
Are they close?
Are they close?
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get them to match a lot of, you know, perfectly.
AR deposit dates, all kinds.
Yeah. And so they're going to catch up at some point. They match when they fall behind, right? Is what they do. But at the end of the day, if you are only taking your deposits, man, you might have something else going on in your practice too. So if your cost of goods sold is off, it could be in that revenue number in your deposits.
Yeah.
Mischarges, all that kind of stuff.
This P&L here specifically, if you look at it, the second line, 5,000 uncategorized income, I put this in there specifically just to point it out. It's 34,000. Yeah. So it says we had a lot more deposits come in than the practice management system knew about.
Yeah.
So, okay, what's happening there? Did we get a big rebate from somebody? Like, why is there extra income that we don't know about?
Right.
In there. And so I think our team does a really good job of you know, calling folks and being like, hey, this looks like something's going on here. And we dive into this, make sure something's not miscategorized, something's not going on.
Yep.
Or the inverse of that, it's really negative. The practice management system said we made more money than we had in the bank. And so, you know, that's one of those big safeguards that I think is really, really important to be watching for.
Absolutely. Absolutely is. Well, more on here, Cam.
As everybody can see, this one on the left is really daunting. That's why we're trying to make it visual.
Yeah.
But you know, you can get on down into labor and rent, all those good things down towards the bottom that all make up your graph, your financial metrics, your KPIs and everything. So if we switch gears to the other graphic there, I made a
vital signs graphic.
The vital signs graphic, basically, yeah. And so I made this basically to illustrate our point. And so basically, if we just take one line of revenue and we say, you know, in 2023, this practice has one doctor, they made $1 million. This practice made
top line revenue.
And so, you know, we spent $270,000 on cost of goods sold. So that's a 27% of income.
Cost of goods sold
right there.
Yep.
And so, which is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 73% gross profit, which is,
it's decent. So we get down into, you know, expenses. And so what plays into that? So I put in, you know, $300,000 of labor and, you know, $18,000 ish of taxes. Just so I plugged in some stuff, which gets us to a 32% labor rate, which is really good.
Yeah.
And so it brings us down to net income of, you know, once we take out all the other things, of about $135,000, which is 14-ish% net income, which is great. Right.
You see, you got a butt in that, Stephen. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you get into obviously the doctor owner's not paying themselves as a doctor.
Right. Through our discovery, we figured that out, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if that doctor, if we just assume they produced 700,000, hospital did 3. So, you know, if you paid them at 18%, just a rough 18% gross production calculation, you know, $126,000 should have been their salary.
Right.
And so, you know, taking that out of net income, gets us to about a $9,000 net income rate, which is a significantly different practice than what the financial statement would show if you just took it at face value.
And a lot of doctors feel that they're making that kind of money as far as the net income, right? Yeah. The $135,000 right there. And what that also is a vital sign for is the valuation, the value of your practice. Mm-hmm. Because anybody that's going to value your practice is going to do this adjustment. And that's going to surprise the crap out of you.
Mm-hmm. As I was thinking about this episode, I was really trying to think about, you know, all of our single doctor owners out there.
Yeah.
And you know, which is great. There's a lot of them that do very well. And if you fully understand the way, you know, you pay yourself is a direct reflection of the value, then that's just fine. Yeah. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But however, when you start getting into the question of if you leave, what happens if you leave for a week and go on vacation and you just one doctor, you gotta start accounting for those things.
For a relief vet
or, you know, close a few days or whatever that is.
Yeah.
So that's why that value looks considerably lower with a single doctor practice, a single doctor clinic,
right,
is because you can't just remove that doctor or not pay that doctor and just take the net income.
Yeah.
So if you're a doctor paying yourself well and you have net income, then you're doing really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
But if the net income is just basically what you're taking home, it's a completely different calculation.
Yeah.
At NVMA, it seemed like that was one of the things that we had a lot of conversations about.
They said my
practice wasn't worth much. And I was like, well, you know, here's why.
Yeah. Here's why. Like to them, they're like, I'm bringing home $135,000. This practice produces $135,000.
Yeah.
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 It doesn't.
But if they had to pay you as a veterinarian, there wouldn't be any money left for the new owner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, there's that. And gosh, it's interesting. Of course, getting into EBITDA and all these other kinds of things we won't get into today that, you know, they get into a whole different calculation.
Adjusted EBITDA.
Did you see the Warren Buffett's got a hell of a video back in the 90s?
I don't know.
He calls that a fairy tale number.
It is.
It is, but it's what everyone uses. Mm-hmm. So it's what's standard to do. So yeah, I think someone would think in their practice, they go, I should be able to get I got $1 million of income. I got $1 million practice.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't translate all the way.
Yeah. And one of these articles, and I forget which one it was, said that, you know, the average veterinary clinic was worth like $1.3 million.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to find which article that was, but that is such a blanket, broad statement,
right?
Like a veterinarian, I can't sit there and look at that metric and say, oh, I'm probably worth 1.3.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe you're worth way more than that, but it's just too broad of a paintbrush.
Not to go, you know, if you look at studies, right? Any studies that's come out on benchmarking and those things. And if you look at the sample size and, you know, Lauren, she teaches a qualitative analysis class for PhD students over the University of Missouri. And she understands data sets. And she looks at the data sets, they're not good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to call the industry out right now. They're not good. So when you get back to what's in a number, what they're good for is a starting point.
Is it?
But they are not the truth. They're not the truth because you are, not only are you, you have this 1,000 respondees, where'd they come from? You know, the demographics of it all. There's a lot more calculation that goes into that. And so, yeah, I think that the industry has work to do. And that's why the DVM office will bring a new look to the industry, because it is actual numbers from the practices in a way that does, when I say standardize them, it's not only that I have the right chart of account, got the right things on the right places, and I can prove it. And then I can go off of this practice is a one doc practice or a two doc practice, three doc practice. This practice is in St. Louis. This practice is in Howard County, you know, Dr. Stroop, right? Mm-hmm. Those things that we can show then based on your areas and those things that do make a difference. Mm-hmm. We're still trying to get the same net income across all these practices, but their pathway there is unique.
Mm-hmm.
No question about it. So you got to have a tailored strategy. Like say the benchmarks KPI, I think you're right about saying buzzwords. They are.
Well, it's a KPI is anything. I could sit here and out of those 200 line items, I could probably make 400 or 500 KPIs.
Yeah.
If I wanted to.
Yeah. Well, and after your vital signs, right, your three vital signs, you might go, all right, I want to select these 7 KPIs to focus on in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm gonna select those things out of whether that's expenses or you know, diving down deep in that, or benefits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my benefits are part of my labor rate. So where are we at there? Do we have the right benefits? So there's,
Yeah, tailored strategies matter. So yeah, as I've gone through and looked at all these studies coming from the supermarket industry, which has data, because what the supermarket industry did is, take Coca-Cola. Let's use Coca-Cola for an example. You used to buy a pallet of Coca-Cola and they go, we'll give you a dollar case back. Just flat out, just here's a bucket case. Well, then they got into where people were buying a bunch of pallets of Coke, getting the rebate, and then becoming their distributors themselves, because the C-store down the road can buy Coke for that same price. Mm-hmm. But you could make 50 cents like that and give them that at 50 cents lower than they could buy it for. So that they make money, you make money. So it's diverting what happened. Mm-hmm. A huge industry. It's shrunk up. Still out there. But diverting the truck industry is unbelievable. But what I'm getting to here is that what Coke went to, and the big companies, pretty much all companies on rebates, is they flatsy what you sell and what you sold it for right out of your system. And what's different about what the veterinary industry does not have is barcodes. It does not have UPCs for anything. That they don't scan things. They don't, you know, some do, but for the most part, Coca-Cola at every grocery store, C store, that 12-pack of Coca-Cola has the same number on it. That's standardization. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking to bring to a DVM office, continue to innovate and bring that kind of standardization to go that, yeah, this really does match this. That's the other thing we get when we do our pricing analysis for somebody to see how they're charging services, those things, compared to what they should actually be charging for that service. And in surgeries, especially, they'll get in there, or spays and neuters, right? Where it's like, oh no, but my spay includes dot, 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 dot. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about standardization, we can standardize this over here, this chart of accounts, but where the real trick gets into, we're going to talk about it next time as we get, you know, approach the end of this episode here. But just to mention again is, you know, we talk about getting PIMS data out of the system. Mm-hmm. That's Wild Wild West data.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, I've seen doctors leave and then still be getting things coded to them.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Not be at the practice for a year. I'm like, who is this person? You know, you go into evaluation and it's like, who's Dr. Smith?
Yeah.
That's a fake one.
Yeah.
We have some people that know a Dr. Smith.
Or the catch-all, the hospital.
Yeah.
The hospital gets it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure who
Dr. Smith left 3 years ago. Why are we still coding?
Yeah.
He saw 8 appointments this year.
Do doctors get refills? Coded to them. What do they get? Or do refills go? So many. There's no standardization across there. So you talk about tailored strategy. That tailored strategy matters for how that person's going to pay the doctor. Mm-hmm. They might have a separate agreement with them to say, you'll get paid for X, or you'll get paid just a flat fee. So
it matters.
Man, it matters.
Yeah.
And it matters to get over to here. This P&L is not going to look at doctor production, but it's going to look at labor rate. Mm-hmm. And people start talking about, oh, I don't really like paying production. You are paying on production, even if you're paying a flat rate, because you have a labor rate mm-hmm. that's got to work itself out. And there's a reason that production's at 20 to 22% because it correlates over here on your profit and loss statement that matters. And so those two are separate and, you know, the same.
Same, but different.
But different, still same, mm-hmm. you know, they all work together.
Yeah. I think, if we just kind of had a blanket takeaway from what this episode was supposed to do, it was, if you're looking at benchmarks, KPIs, whatever it is that you're looking at, and you don't quite line up, it's not a cause to freak out. Maybe it is, but on the cusp of it, you should do some further investigation.
How's your bank account doing? That's one of the key things, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, it's like, is my bank account depleting or maintaining, growing? What is my bank account doing?
Right.
Right. If we want to talk about vital sizing in the day, it's like, what's my credit card balance? What's my bank account? Those are two vital signs outside of profit and loss.
Right.
You're exactly right about that.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's such a big number just because your cost of goods sold rate, your labor rate is not what the benchmark you saw or you heard at the last conference you went to.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're off base. Doesn't mean you're wrong. Doesn't
right.
mean, you know, you're doing great either. It could mean, you know, you have a false sense of doing well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's all a cause for further investigation.
Are you ready to elevate your practice but unsure where to begin? Look no further than DVM Office. As a veterinary exclusive firm specializing in the AHA chart of accounts, we provide tailored, actionable data for your practice. Whether it's tracking growth, industry comparisons, or decision impact, count on us for insights. Learn more at thedvmoffice.com.
Yeah, I think it's what the episode we're talking about here is one, how do we simplify this for the veterinary practice? For them to feel confident in what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. And then, you know, number two is to go, if you really want to run an optimized practice that's good for your culture, good for your family, good for your crew, your team, for what they make, you know, because you can pay your crew more if you're doing well and your labor rate's right.
That, yeah.
Right? Yeah. If I got a low labor rate, is it because I'm efficient or I'm not paying well? Might hopefully it's because you're efficient, your people kick ass and they're making good money. But I think that it really, as we've gone through this episode today too, is it gets back to those tailored strategies. As a privately owned veterinary practice, you're getting inundated with KPI news, benchmarking news. You sit at Western, you sit at VMX, you sit at FET, you sit at all these conferences with these people up here talking, and they're well-intentioned, probably giving you some decent advice, right? But have you really sat down and questioned it to understand, Kale, what you said from the beginning is what's in a number is really understanding you, your practice, and taking the time to think beyond just what you bring back.
Mm-hmm.
And then also have an action plan and accountability partner that really understands that. And they're out there. We're out there to help. There's others that are out there to help, but it's getting through that noise. It's getting to, again, correlation of you use a certain piece of equipment for diagnostics, whether, you know, Abaxis, IDEX, you know, who, Antec, who else is out there doing that stuff, because you probably get good support.
Mm-hmm.
You get good support. And so you can buy all the equipment, you can go to all the conferences, but you got to have good support.
You do. That's at the end of the day, that's really what people want is a phone to call when something goes wrong.
Yep. Pick up that phone and say, yeah, who am I calling? Yeah. Not just think about it. It's actually pick it up. We get that, right? It's like,
let me call him. Done.
Unreasonable expectations, right? We sit around here. Mm-hmm. We're here. We're here to help the veterinary practice owner. Heck, you got a pretty wild call.
I mean, I love those calls though. Like, it,
yeah.
And what's even worse about it, and I guess this may not be a bad thing, but like, I'm so sorry to call you out of the blue.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah.
No, please do.
Yeah.
Please call me.
Yeah.
I don't want you to be sit there freaking out. And I tell everybody this, like, you know, if I give you my cell phone number, use it. If you need to talk to me, talk to me.
But you understand them.
Yeah.
We go into it. Yeah. We want to see the practice profitable. All right. We want to see the culture really good. But you got to start with the foundation.
Separate.
You got to start with the right foundation of understanding that person, how they work, and make sure that their tailored strategy is right for them, so we can have a vibrant veterinary community of empowered private business owners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big deal to have. That's success of all sides and important. So excited to bring part one today about, we might have raised more questions than answers, might have spun around way too many different parts. I don't know. Lindo's scratching his head over here going, when are these guys going to be done? So I can.
I had a blast. You know,
I had a good time.
I had a good time talking about that.
Yeah. We love numbers. And Lindo, what do you think, man? Are we hitting the point?
Yes, you did. It was amazing. It was an amazing episode. As you guys mentioned, like even everything you mentioned, I think you do.
A director wouldn't say amazing. He's an intern.
No, listen.
You know, he's here.
No, but I think you're right. This will raise more questions than answers. And I guess that's why we're going to do the part two, you know, so we can answer those questions.
Yeah. I would love to see questions. You know, we've got our... So as a wrap up here today, you can ask them on the YouTube channel. You can go to our Facebook page, The Vetted Podcast, or Instagram page. And as we post things, ask questions. We can incorporate that in the episode here.
Yeah.
We would love to do that. Email us, call us at Pro Partners Team. There's multiple ways to get a hold of us, but hey, if you're really liking what we're doing, you know, part of the growth here to share again, our whole thing is about education,
inspiration, advocation.
Advocation. We caught him off guard. He was looking to make sure that it's still recording. Everything's going right. Sorry, Linda.
He's busy.
Put you on
actually
spot.
We're just talking.
Yeah, we're just talking over here, but education, advocation, inspiration. And to bring another viewpoint again.
Yeah.
If you like our viewpoint, like and subscribe to our channel on YouTube, on Spotify, on Amazon, on Apple, on Google. I mean, we have 15 different places you can listen to it, and, you know, all those things out there. Whatever's, that's why we understand people listen to it on different platforms. So we're happy to provide north of 15 platforms to listen on, and we look forward to continuing these. Again, coming in our next episode, Jason Merkling. He's the sales manager out of the Kansas City area, managing 11 regional salespeople with IDEX. IDEX is good support in this area. We enjoy talking to them because they also have gone to more of a consultative role with the practices. It's not just about the equipment. It's about,
not about the sale.
Not about the sale. It's about the relationship. And that's what we want to see happen. So we'll have him on next episode. Should be a lot of fun. Hey, again, keep it simple. Three vital signs. Got questions. We're here to help. Find someone that can help. If it's not us, find somebody that you get along with that can help you optimize your business for your crew, your family, your pets, your clients. It's a community. It all matters. Thanks so much for your time today, Cale. Any parting words?
I'll just say peace and blessings.
I love that. Take care, everyone.